Dear Sugar is supported by
The universe has good news for the lost, lonely, and heartsick. Sugar is here, the both of us, speaking straight into your ears. I'm Cheryl Strayed.
I'm Steve Almond. This is Dear Sugar Radio.
Oh, dear soul, won't you please share some bittersweet days with me? I check my bell vibes every day in the sugar you send my way.
Hi, Steve.
Hello, Cheryl.
So today we're going to talk about a subject that's dear to my heart, motherhood, being a mother. One of the things that I experienced so enormously when I became a mom was really just this shocking amount of love. You always hear about this mother's love and how powerful it is. And when I experienced it myself, it absolutely blew me away. It's if you asked me the single person who maybe changed my life the most, I would probably have to say my firstborn, my firstborn child, Carver, because I really did change in very essential ways when I went from being a person who wasn't a mother to becoming a person who was a mother. Something deep in me shifted when he was born. And along with that love came all of that other stuff that is revealed to you when you become a mother, which is the enormous amount of sacrifice that loving someone that much requires. And I've never had such bright, light, profoundly beautiful moments as I have in mothering my kids. And I've never had such dark moments. Yeah. My kids have tested me to my absolute limit and then far beyond it.
Right.
And we're going to talk about that dark side today.
Yeah.
We're going to read a couple of letters that we don't get a lot of, this sort of letter that says, listen, I'm a mother and I'm not sure that I made the right choice in becoming one.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that it's a really deep and interesting, it's a taboo topic.
Yeah.
And so I'm so looking forward to talking about it today.
It's been something I've been preoccupied about because it's one of those crimes that dare not speak its name, maternal ambivalence, and even, as we'll hear in these letters, maternal rage, a sense of abject entrapment, you know, a kind of violent disagreement with the arrangement of motherhood. And like all things that are kept out of the light, it grows and it festers. And part of the reason we're going to read these two very tough letters is because I think moms especially experience these feelings on a spectrum. Everybody does. And the culture does not permit us, because of what you talked about, the beautiful light parts of parenthood and how much we sanctify that. We are therefore forbidding moms to talk about the other side of the dark side of maternity and being a mother. And that's tough. My mom, of course, has thought a lot about this because she wrote this book, The Monster Within, which is about maternal ambivalence. And part of that was her talking to patients as a psychoanalyst for years and reading in literature and in popular culture, you know, the astonishment and horror anytime that maternal ideal of complete selflessness and joy and fulfillment in motherhood is violated, even a little bit. And these letters, I dare say, are going to violate that romantic notion pretty seriously. So brace yourselves.
Yeah. And later in the episode, we're going to get a bit of advice and help from a therapist who has worked on these issues throughout her career.
Yes, Dr. Lois Nakamy.
So let's begin. What we're going to do today is read two letters from mothers who are really deeply challenged by motherhood. And we're going to discuss them collectively, even though they differ in some ways and there are some nuances to each of them. They both are saying the same thing. I'll begin. Dear Sugar, on your podcast, you have touched upon motherhood, on loving it, and on those who choose not to become parents. But then there are the ambivalent, like me, or those who absolutely hate it most of the time, like me. Sugars, it took me and my husband 13 years to get pregnant. I went through fertility treatments and procedures, and I gained and lost hope throughout the entire journey. I gave up trying to become pregnant, and even though everyone told me that's when I'd get pregnant, it didn't happen. I worked hard at figuring out my own dreams and filling my life so that motherhood was not a singular goal. I did that. And then finally, At the age of 39, I told myself it would be okay if I never became a mother. I really accepted the possibility. I embraced it. Of course, that's the year I became pregnant. I found pregnancy interesting, but I wasn't joyful. I lost a couple of friends who found my ambivalence in pregnancy distasteful. I'm a writer. I couldn't read or write that year. I had an amazing birth sugar, but then came the year from hell. My daughter is an amazing being and beautiful and bright from the moment she breathed air, but I got horrible postpartum depression. I wanted to die every single day of that first year. I carried her in a sling, and I walked, and I sang, and I danced, but nothing would chase that darkness away. That year, my husband left me after 18 years together and 14 years of marriage. I got help for my postpartum depression, and things got better. I worked very hard on happiness for myself and for my daughter. I worked very, very hard. I began writing again. I even got a 2-book deal this year after 10 years of writing and keeping on, keeping on. I love my daughter. She's now 2 years old. But I hate motherhood. I hate it so much. I hate the lack of sleep, and I hate playing Ring Around the Rosie, and I hate picking up pasta from the floor, and I hate the tantrums. I do my best. I play with her as much as I can, and I cuddle with her, because I love her, even though I hate mothering. I don't find innate joy in motherhood. I feel guilty all the time. I feel like I'm not doing enough for my daughter, and I feel like I'm letting her down, and I feel so, so, so tired. I don't know what I'm doing half the time. I relish weekends she is away with her father, and I feel very guilty about that. I love her when she's sleeping. I mean, that's when I love her most. People tell me it gets better, and it does. The first year was so hard, and I'm told that when she turns 4, it will become magical. But I don't know. My life is so amazing as a whole, and I'm now in a relationship with a good man. I just wonder how I can work on this. How can I not mind the work of writing but hate the work of motherhood and yet love my daughter so much? I mean, I can't choose not to be a mom. It's part of who and what I am now. How can I learn to love motherhood? Love, I'd rather be an auntie.
Dear Sugars, I sit here and I'm not sure how to begin. Thinking about this makes me cry immediately, and I'll apologize now for how long this letter will be. I guess I'll start at the beginning. I always wanted to get married and have kids. It was never a question for me that I would have a family. I've always loved kids and started babysitting when I was 10. When my husband and I met, we fell instantly in love. We've been together since the moment we met. He's a wonderful man and a wonderful husband. When we started trying to have kids, we went through 2 years of infertility, a relatively short time in the infertility world, but for me, it felt like a gut-wrenching lifetime. We both prayed, non-religious praying, at a little homemade altar every night for the child we wanted. We were lucky, and the IVF worked. We had a baby. We were ecstatic. The first few years were hard, as they are for any new parent, but full of so much love and joy. We left the pain of infertility behind us, and then we got accidentally pregnant, the natural way. We'd always wanted 2 or 3 kids total, so we were totally shocked but very excited. When we had the second baby, our family felt complete. Cut to 2 years later, and I hate being a parent. I mean, I really, really hate it. My kids are wonderful. They are sweet and lovely, and of course I love them, and they are no more trouble really than anyone's kids are, I don't think, but I can't stand it. The amount of chaos, noise, needs, disruptions, whining, meals, laundry, etc. is so far beyond what my limits are that I can barely function. And it should be noted that I don't suffer from depression or have anything clinical going on. I regularly see my doctor and do all the self-care I have time for. I went to therapy for this for over a year. The problem really seems to be that I hate parenting and being with my kids. When I'm at work part-time or out with friends or whatever, I feel great. My mood lifts, and none of the anger and exhaustion I feel when I'm with my family remains. I have heard you both say in another podcast that at around 30, it's time to stop blaming your parents for your problems, and I want to believe I can do that. But so much of parenting reminds me of how I was raised and how differently I wanted to do it. My mom yelled at me, verbally insulted me, surrounded me in chaos, emotionally manipulated me, hit me occasionally. My dad was completely emotionally unavailable. but there are certainly worse childhoods. They did the best they could, but I wanted to do so, so much better for my kids. And so I don't want to blame my parents entirely for why I have no tolerance for the chaos of parenting. I don't want to say that I yell at my kids because my parents yelled at me. I've taken so many parenting classes and read so many books and have such a high standard for how I think parenting should be done, and yet I am nowhere near where I think I should be. I guess what I'm asking you for advice about is, how can I accept my lot? How can I accept that I hate parenting when there is no way out of it? How can I find enjoyment in something I thought I'd love but actually hate? Short of running away or killing myself, I'm stuck being a parent. I don't think I'd ever really do either of those things, but I think about them almost daily. I can't even bring myself to type the sorts of things I fantasize about happening so that I won't have to deal with all of this anymore. Of course, I don't really want any of those horrible things to happen, but I can't stop thinking about them, as there is no way out. If this were a bad marriage, I could divorce, but you can't divorce kids, can you? Can you do that sort of thing and still be an okay person? I get as much time away from the kids as we can afford. My husband works full-time, and his job supports us. As much childcare as we can afford, we get, and I use that time to work, which I love. My husband is also an amazing parent. The minute he steps in the door, he's on with the kids. He participates in all areas of the household. He gives me all the time I want, nights and weekends, to see friends, but it's never enough. Nothing makes me stop feeling like a scream is erupting in my head. Everyone always says, oh, parenting is the hardest thing you'll ever do, but it's worth it. But I realize that for me, it's not. The good simply does not outweigh the bad. In fact, the bad far, far outweighs the good. My kids are perfect, and I am miserable about 90% of the time. I never get to shower anymore. Before I had kids, I would see women who had completely let themselves go after kids, and I couldn't comprehend how putting on a little lipstick was so hard. Now I see that not only putting on said lipstick, but taking it off at night are such Herculean tasks that there is no way I could even accomplish it. I have not gone to the bathroom without someone on my lap or crying outside the closed door in over 4 years. I never get to exercise, and even when I have time for it, I don't have the energy. I hardly ever get to work as much as I really want. I'm jealous of my husband who gets to work 5 days a week. I never get a minute alone at home, not 1 minute. I have aged 20 years in the 4 that I've had kids. The kids make it so that I can't have a conversation with my husband. I can't have a date with my husband. I can't stop fighting with my husband about the kids. There is constant whining, constant whining, constant. My body is always being stepped on, squished, pulled, yanked, carrying something, being pummeled. I can't sit down for 1 second without both kids fighting over me, climbing on me, inadvertently punching me in the eye, the breast, the gut. There are moments when I have to pull them off me like leeches and run to the other room for a hair's breadth of freedom. I am always blaming my husband and myself for poor modeling, since it must be our fault our kids whine and scream all the time. I am always trying to stay calmer than I feel. Someone is always going through a phase. Someone is always having a developmental leap. Someone is always tired. Someone is always hungry. Someone is always not getting enough books read to them. Someone is always not getting enough craft projects. Someone is always complaining that we don't have enough money to do something we want to for the kids. There are always dishes that aren't done, always laundry that is piling up. Someone is always waking you in the night, every hour of night. Someone never wants to eat the healthy food you cook for them, that you took 4 hours to cook for them. Someone is always wanting what their sibling has. Someone is always screaming about what someone else took from them. Someone is always hitting someone. Someone always needs special time alone with you. There is always something to worry about, something to be afraid of. And all of this usually ends with me yelling at the kids in a way that is totally unfair to them, totally not in line with how I want a parent, and feels totally unavoidable to me. It gets to a point where I don't even care that I'm scaring or scarring the kids emotionally. I just want it to stop. I want peace, calm, quiet. I want something that I don't have. I know I sound like an asshole. I probably am. But the minute I'm not dealing with the kids, life is totally great. How could I have misunderstood that this is what parenting is like? How could I have been so ill-prepared? What is so wrong with me that I can't calmly handle this thing that almost all the world handles? Thank you, Sugars. Thanks for listening. Listening to you both makes me feel like there is hope for humanity, if not for me. With love, the Bad Mom.
Wow. Yeah. I, as a mother, had two reactions to these letters.
Yes.
One is that I relate to so much of the complaints that each of these women have about, like, the really unbelievable drudgery, the burden of motherhood. I know these women are writing to us in real sorrow, but, you know, this description of, like, someone is always having a developmental leap and someone is always hungry, and the way she can't sit down without someone being on her lap. She can't go to the bathroom. She can't take a shower.
Right.
I completely and utterly identify with that. And that is the fact of the matter. That's what motherhood is.
Mm-hmm.
I just remember thinking that word sacrifice had a new definition in my life once I became a mother.
Right.
And I was as stunned by that as I was by the love I had for my son. So I relate to that deeply. The part that I didn't relate to is the way I've interpreted that kind of discomfort.
Mm-hmm.
The piece of this that I think that both of these women are driving at, that Bad Mom expresses really well, is everyone always says parenting is the hardest thing you'll do, but it's worth it. And I've never doubted that it was worth it.
Mm-hmm. The connection, the couple of connections that I immediately saw in these letters is that both of these women, they're two things. The first is that they struggled to get pregnant, and they had this huge expectation that having a child would deliver a deeper sense of fulfillment. It had been withheld from them. In fact, Bad Mom talks about setting up an altar, you know, to the possibility of the child being born, right? And that's really setting up the child in a way as a kind of God, the agent that delivers redemption.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a pretty high expectation to put on motherhood as an experience. And I think it might start to explain why the reality of it feels so devastating and abject for her. And both of them felt that
yeah,
they'd wanted this thing for so long. And yet both of these women, who have these huge hopes and expectations about the kind of gift that motherhood is going to be, find out that inside that package is tedium and frustration and loss of their personal liberty and their selfhood, and that's devastating. So I think there might be a relationship between the expectations and how hard they had to work to have a child and what the reality of that experience was.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing that I see in both of them is, and I think we've heard this from other letters about motherhood, they're putting huge expectations on themselves as moms. And so they get locked in this cycle of, I've got to be a great mom. I've got to do it better in the case of Bad Mom than my parents did. And in the case of I'd Rather Be an Auntie, it's clearly very important to her. She has an ideal mom in her head.
Mm-hmm.
And we've talked about Donald Winnicott and this idea of the good enough mom and the way in which this ideal mom, a completely self-sacrificing, nurturing being who never has a frustration and loves your kids unconditionally, not only is it unrealistic, it's destructive, because women and men as parents are completely flawed. And it's the expectation that they're going to do it perfectly that leads to this cycle of recrimination and then guilt. Mm-hmm. I leave the kids and I feel so relieved, but then I feel guilty that I feel that relief. Why should you feel guilty? It's really hard work and it's really frustrating work. And nobody does it perfectly. Nobody does it even close to perfectly. So those are the two things where I think the letter writers are speaking to the same experience of having this huge expectation of what motherhood was going to deliver and then thinking of themselves as abject failures. Not just that they hate motherhood, but they're failures as mothers.
Yeah. One of the most interesting things about these letters, and I guess the piece of light that's at the center of both of these letters, is the fact that they love their kids.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Here we have these women making these very taboo statements saying, I hate being a mom. But that's a different thing than saying, I hate my kids, right?
Yep.
You know, how
but interestingly, Cheryl, just, you know, one of the things, that list you read, that, you know, someone is always, someone is always, someone is always, that is, in her own way, her way of speaking about the, how frustrated she is with the kids and sort of depersonalizing and saying,
right,
someone is always, well, we know who that someone is.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, moms get furious and frustrated with their kids more than anyone else.
Right.
They just don't feel that they can express that.
Yeah. One thing that struck me as interesting is how the kind of language that they both use, I love my child or I love my children, I hate being a mother. And you think about translating that to something else, like, you know, if I say, I love my husband, I wouldn't say I love being a wife. One is a role, and the other is a relationship.
Yeah.
I feel a deep sense that part of what is so hard about these feelings that they have is they feel alone in them, they feel ashamed of them,
right.
and they feel guilty about them.
Right.
Okay? So when all is lost, when everything's gone to hell, I think one of the things that you can do to sort of find your way back is to think, okay, what is the one good thing about this? Where is the light? Using this idea of I love my children or I love my child as the life raft to get you out of this terrible darkness, which is this, I hate being a mother, I hate being a mother, you know, attaching yourself to that idea, which will only bring you more deeply into a sense of despair versus attaching yourself to this statement, I love my daughter, I love my children. So if we helped them look at this in a new way, by way of saying, yeah, the fact of the matter is motherhood is not the way you thought it was going to be. You've fallen short by your own measures.
Unrealistic measures.
And so maybe you need to take a look at that.
Yep.
Maybe you need to take a look at what part that shame and guilt is actually playing in contributing to your sense of how much you hate mothering. You know, when I say to you, I'm using this wife comparison, to me, like if you just said, what is a wife? You know, I wouldn't say me. A wife has all of these cultural connotations, all of these expectations through almost all of time. In fact, through all time, if you assessed me and, you know, how I stand up as a wife, I would fail by every measure. Okay. I'm a different kind of wife than we've expected women to be throughout all of human history. And I think that it might be helpful for these women to really dismantle for themselves this idea that they have is what is a mother to them?
Right.
What is a mother? And then how can they redefine that word in their own lives, emanating from that idea?
Right.
The first and foremost, I'll tell you this right now, the most important thing that a mother is a person who loves her children. And bad mom, and I'd rather be an auntie, that's exactly what you both are. And so you have already performed the most important, and some people would argue the only important task of being a mom. You truly love your children.
Yes, or I would say maybe we could say it like this. Allow yourself to hate this part of being a mom rather than motherhood.
Mm-hmm.
Both of these moms are trying so hard to do it well, to do it right, to do it perfect. And this passage in Bad Mom's letter, she says, you know, I don't want to blame my parents for why I have no tolerance for the chaos of parenting. I don't want to say that I yell because my parents yelled at me. I don't want to make any excuses. I've taken so many parenting classes and read so many books and have such a high standard for how I think parenting should be done, and yet I'm nowhere near where I think I should be. This is not helping you.
No.
This is part of the treadmill that is this cycle of recrimination because you're holding yourself to an impossible standard, inevitably failing, being angry and frustrated and self-hating about it. The chaos of parenting she describes, we completely recognize, and every other parent who's listening to the podcast will say, yes, that is how it is. In a sense, these women are super in touch with the frustrations. You are accurately describing how completely annihilating it can be, a certain portion of motherhood can be to the identity of the mom, but it's so exacerbated. She's her own worst enemy.
Right.
If she thinks she's going to parent class or read a book and somehow that's going to transform how frustrated she feels with how, you know, brutally tiring and frustrating and thwarting and entrapping it can feel to have, in this case, two small kids at home.
Right. And it does make me wonder if these women are being, you know, just sort of overly critical, that internal critic that we all have, overly critical of their own dark thoughts, that in some ways they're so horrified that they have these thoughts at all that then they become amplified by their own horror. And this is something I've talked about with lots of parents, which is a very unpleasant thing to say because it can be easily misunderstood. But I realized when I became a mother that there was a piece of child abuse that I understood because I understood the rage that sometimes that abuse begins with. And of course, there's a huge difference between acting on that rage in an abusive way and knowing that feeling in your body.
Oh, yeah.
And I think this is what Bad Mom's talking about when she's like having these terrible thoughts that she would never act on, because your kids, as I said at the top, they bring out our dark side.
Yeah. So now it feels like a perfect time to give a call to Dr. Lois Nakamy, who is a psychotherapist who works in New York City and works specifically with parents and often moms who are feeling various levels of conflict about their experiences as parents. So let's give her a call.
Hello,
is this Lois?
Yes, hi.
Hi, this is Steve Allman. I'm here with Cheryl Strayed.
Hi, Lois.
Hi to both of you.
You know, we were talking about these very intense letters, and, you know, we're very curious to hear what your take is as somebody who works with parents, you know, every day.
Both of the letters were so moving, each of them. Each of these women is really up against it emotionally in a lot of different ways. So I was thinking about sort of, if you pull the camera way, way back, they are not the only women who feel this way. Mm-hmm. And usually people who struggle with motherhood sort of feel isolated and embarrassed and as if it's just them.
Yes, mm-hmm. Yes.
They are very much not alone. And a lot of people don't share how they feel about the discomfort of parenthood. So these women are very brave in being as open and honest as they are, perhaps in some ways because it's anonymous. They're writing in. I know that the one who wanted to be an auntie lost some friends when she started talking about being ambivalent about her pregnancy.
That's right.
So
mm-hmm.
People learn very quickly that it's
unacceptable.
Oh, it's very unacceptable. It's very sort of unpleasant. You just don't admit it. So the first thing that both of those moms should know is that they're not alone. The other thing is that all of us have a very romanticized version of parenthood.
Mm.
You know, it's Hallmark cards, it's all soft focus, it's all lovely, it's all beautiful, or it's all sitcom, ha, 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 how mm-hmm. annoying it is.
Yeah.
Right.
But very rarely are we really embedded in how difficult it is emotionally. So I think because they have these lovely, lovely images that they're not living up to, or they, both of them had difficult childhoods as well, so they're trying to make amends for whatever they grew up with, which is a lot of parents do that. If you have a controlling parent, then you tend to be a little overly permissive. You know, whatever it is, a lot of people go the other way.
Yep.
So on a very broad scale, they are replicating what a lot of people feel. Also, these two women, one is a writer, and I don't know what
the other's a very good writer.
Yeah.
She's clearly a very
marvelous
good
writer.
She is.
Yeah.
I love that list of all the burdens of motherhood. Made me laugh.
Absolutely. She is a spectacular writer. So I think that's another a kind of a footnote in this. I don't have scientific evidence of this, but in my experience, people who are artists, one of the things that both of these women are up against that maybe some others might not be is the desire to go into your own head.
Yeah.
You tell me if you've had this experience. When you're following a thought and it's all you can do, it's running around in the back of your head, and all of a sudden there's somebody knocking on your door mentally.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Or yanking at
you. Or your
you.
Boob.
Yes.
Knocking on
right,
your
or
nipple.
Yanking, right, or yanking on your boobs. Exactly.
Yeah.
So I think each of these women, particularly because you're in control as an artist in a way. You know, you're
right.
not in control of another person.
Right.
You might not be in control of your material, but at some point you and the material have a kind of a dance, but it's within you. It's not relational. So the child is a relational event, and I think that's where these people are coming up against some problems. The other thing that these two women have in common is the infertility.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
When you go through as much as these women have gone through, then of course you want it to be perfect.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So there's an extra added layer of, like, if you're a 20-year-old who gets knocked up and you're mad at your kid, so what?
Right.
You know you're mad at your kid. But these women very carefully and strenuously went through an awful lot to get there.
Right. So, Lois, what would you counsel to these women? They're in different situations, but there are parallels. You know, what do you say to a mom who's in this much frustration, pain, shame, in this kind of cycle?
Yes. Here's a thing for both of them to think about. It's not parenting, qua parenting. It's a relationship. So if you're judging yourself on parenting, well, we all fail. That's not it. The thing is the relationship. So each of these women, and my heart like really bleeds for them, to tell you the truth. Each of them is desperately feeling like a failure on a nonstop basis.
Right.
And if they were able in some way to find, there's not a kid alive who's not cute. In the midst of all the, you know, the dirt and the drudgery and the clutter and the crap and all that other stuff, what's that little face looking at you? Is that a funny little face? What are those little hands doing? Does that little head smell good, even if it hasn't been washed? You know, all those little physical sensations.
And they say they love their kids. And that made me, in the midst of that, they hate mothering, they love their kids. I wondered what you thought about that.
Well, but interestingly, Cheryl, they don't do the same laundry list. I think what Lois is saying is, wouldn't it be nice for them to allow themselves to write a similar laundry list about the things that they love and value and esteem about their kids?
Right.
There's a moment in Bad Mom's letter where she says, there are moments when I have to pull my kids off me like leeches and run to the other room for a hair's breadth of freedom. And when you talk about the relational system, I wonder if you would draw a line between the kids' neediness and clinginess and their apprehension of the fact that she is trying to escape from them.
Absolutely. Bingo. Bad Mom, first of all, without criticizing her, I would encourage her deeply to get somebody to help her wean her children. I couldn't do the math, but she's been a mother for 4 years, so she doesn't have babies in the house anymore.
Mm-hmm.
There's a dependence being fostered, and I'm not sure because I'm not her therapist, but somehow she's having a hard time setting limits. At this point, she should be able to go to the John without having kids banging on the door.
Yep. Right.
They should be able to be asleep.
Mm-hmm.
That's the relation part of it. So if you're always inside trying to get away, your kid is always trying to come closer.
Right.
That's straight up attachment. If you are emotionally withdrawn, then the child will try to reach you because that's a biological survival technique.
Right, right. And that neediness, the apprehension that she's not just ambivalent but trying to escape, seems to be, you know, breeding in a certain kind of neediness. I see this in my own kids. When they know that I'm retreating and trying to get space, you know, it's when they say, no, don't go downstairs. If I sat down next to them on the couch, they would say, hey, look, I'm doing something, you know, buzz off.
Mm-hmm.
Right. That's physics. Kid physics.
I think you've given Bad Mom a bit of very concrete advice. I think you're right about that. This, it sounds to me like this sort of weaning and making some space for herself will contribute greatly to her sense of having a little bit of that freedom she talks about.
Yeah.
Any other specific advice for her or for Auntie about how to at least feel less overwhelmed than they both seem to feel?
Well, the Auntie, I was really powerfully struck by the amount of loss this woman went through to have this child. Her husband left her after 18 years, and she had postpartum depression, and this guy walks out.
And they have a newborn baby. Yeah.
Oh, my God. And that one just killed me. And she also mentioned that she couldn't read. I'm quoting here. I couldn't read or write. Okay, so now here's a woman who loses everything.
Yeah.
How can she not, in some way, on a very primordial, subconscious level, connect this child to loss? She even says she lost some friends about her ambivalence about pregnancy. So the loss there is extreme.
Yeah.
I think both of these women, they have some fissures inside them from, you know, the little bit that they've written. Both of them, I know one of them said she had been in therapy. I think, honestly, both of them would profit from therapy, because there's some depression in there, and there's some real loss, and each of them exhibits some things that are slightly sideways from the issue of motherhood itself. So my guess is, even though Auntie's found another guy, you know, what went wrong with such a long-term relationship? How could that have happened?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so we're just looking at some people who possibly are struggling with relationships themselves. and because motherhood, because we put so much emphasis on wanting to be good mothers, you know, we don't want to be the kind of mother our mother was. We all want to be better. And because it is ultimately the most important relationship in your world, it would be doing it a disservice to not acknowledge that it really does matter more than any other relationship. Mm-hmm. It does. And that puts a pressure on it. So I think these particular women need some help from somebody else for how to work with the relationship itself. Mm-hmm. And the drudgery of motherhood for a lot of women, and men, by the way, is really not fun. It's right. Really not.
Right.
It really does suck, pardon my French. And, you know, it is annoying. I mean, the other one she wrote in there, she spends 4 hours cooking food that they don't like, so don't spend 4 hours then.
Right. Right.
See, that's how we set ourselves up for failure.
Right.
You know, it's interesting. That brings to mind this statistic I heard. They quizzed parents. They had to rank all of the different tasks that need to be done. Vacuuming the rug and washing the dishes and the laundry and childcare, taking care of the kids was, you know, on that list. And mm-hmm. among both mothers and fathers, mm-hmm. the least desirable activity was mm-hmm. taking care of the children.
Yeah.
So we would rather wash the dishes, scrub the pots, all of yes. those things. But what was fascinating is the most important thing, like all the parents, the number one thing that was like the most important thing to them, the thing that has the most value
yeah.
is their children.
Right.
But it's the
yeah.
thing that they ranked least, that they right. least like to do is actually take care of
right.
them.
It's fascinating. And therein lies the guilt.
Exactly. So let me do that one on two strands. One, you can actually finish washing the dishes. You can
right.
start it and finish it and walk away and it's done.
And the dishes don't throw a cracker at you.
They don't throw a cracker at you. That's right. And even if you drop one and it breaks, then you can still finish washing the dishes.
That's right.
It's a discrete task, whereas parenthood is not a discrete task. There's never a moment when you're done and you can say, aha, I did that. So now the other thing is, because we all live in a society where everyone is overly aware of the ramifications of childhood
yeah.
and the long shadow that your own childhood casts, all the different ramifications of what happens if you do something quote-unquote wrong,
yeah.
so that a couple generations ago, people just did what they did
right.
because that's how they did it. So now not only is it difficult, but you feel guilty because you know this kid is going to be sitting on somebody's couch in 20 years.
Right.
I'm always asking my kids, so how am I doing, kids? Am I a good mom? You think I'm a good mom? You know, because it's like, I feel like I need their approval. And I'll tell you this, my mother never asked me if I thought she was doing a good job, you know?
Right. Of course. Of course she didn't.
That's right. Yeah. And I mean, part of what you're describing is what we call, I think, child-centered parenting. And,
yes.
you know, there are certain benefits to being aware of, right, as Auden reminds us, you know, and Freud was the, you know,
yep.
sort of the revolutionary who said the experiences of early childhood are deeply meaningful and they matter.
Right.
And that's all true and good and important to recognize. But I think part of what these letters are expressing in a sort of shadow form is the tyranny of child-centered parenting, the idea that the mother's feelings have to be a certain way and the mother isn't really allowed to experience her true feelings. Or if those true feelings are ugly, she has to hide them away.
Yeah, I agree with you. I agree with you. Of course, you can't hide those feelings. And so both of these women are riddled with guilt. And that's a circular thing. So what happens is it's like an itch. You know, if you say to yourself, don't think about the itch, then you itch more.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're in the presence of your child and you're thinking, what's the matter with me? I hate this. Then that's where you go. And then you're in that whole guilt cycle that has nothing to do with the kid. And again, without yeah. being too repetitive, then you're not being part of the actual relationship. So like if your kid, if you try to change a diaper, and your kid is screaming and thrashing, look them in the eye and sing a song and see if you can engage them rather than be thinking about, oh, crap, poop is going to get all over the room and all over my hand and I can't get this kid to lie down and I hate this, I hate this.
Yes.
Right.
See, I think that's where they miss it. They miss, like, looking at the actual kid's face and interacting with that human being.
Yeah.
It's thinking about the other human being and how do you build a relationship with somebody you like? How can you connect to what that little person is finding interesting at that moment?
Mm-hmm.
If you're not thinking about yourself and you're not thinking about how you're failing, I mean, if you go out on a date and think about, do I have spinach in my teeth? Oh, God, what I just said was stupid. Oh, I really need
right.
to belch. You know, if that's all you're thinking about,
right.
you are not connecting with the person across the table.
You're not with them. That's right. Yeah.
You're not with them.
Right.
Right.
So, Lois, I have two specific questions about the impact of the feelings that these mothers have on the kids. The first one applies to both of them. What happens, you know, if these women sort of don't change their minds about how much they hate mothering? Can you address the long-term impact that this feeling might have on the kids? And I'm also curious if you were at all concerned about Bad Mom's comment about some of the really dark fantasies she has about what she might do to herself or the kids. And she does say, listen, I'm not going to act on them. But I wanted to know what you thought about that when you read that part of the letter.
Well, I did earlier say that I think both of these women would be well served to find a really good therapist.
Yeah.
And that's not to make it sound more dire than it is, but it sounds like they are carrying a heavier load than some of their peers.
Mm-hmm.
And just to relieve themselves, the one who is talking about the dark images, you know, her writing that in public, her writing that to me is her saying, I'm pretty sure I need some help.
Help, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I would agree with her that she really should, because she doesn't need to necessarily walk through the world in that kind of nightmare state.
Yeah.
And if she gets really some good help, she will feel better.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the first piece. Both of them, I think, would profit from just having somebody in their corner helping them with these things. In terms of the ramifications for the children, that's a really interesting question, particularly if these moms should be listening in, because here we're contributing possibly to their feeling that they are single-handedly going to screw up their kids.
Mm-hmm.
I would think all of us know that a kid whose mom feels sort of benign toward them most of the time probably feels good about themselves. And this would attend to these mommies also thinking about their relationship. If your mom looks at you with the sun is coming out of her eyes when she looks at you, that you are the sun and the moon and the stars, sometimes, not all the time, but enough that you get that feeling, then you keep that, it's called internalized, you put it inside yourself.
Yes.
And then you walk through the world with that sunlight inside you.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the thing that I think these moms aren't letting themselves have, let's put it that way. They're
yes.
not letting themselves have that feeling of sunlight toward these children. They're turning the darkness on themselves, and they're not actually seeing the kids. And if they would let themselves, if they can, just turn a love face toward the kid rather than running around in their internal feelings of gloom, they would feel better, the kids would feel better, and the kids would start, I'm sure, behaving better. So does it have long-term effects if you're in a bad mood around your kid? I think it would be disingenuous to say no, it doesn't.
Right, right.
But I also think these moms don't need to be beat up on because they're already suffering.
That's right.
So,
well, Lois, yeah. thank you. You have been so enormously helpful to us and insightful. Thank you for taking the time to talk to us and to address these mothers who are feeling this way. I know it's not just these two women who are having this experience, but thank you for considering their letters with us.
Oh, I can't thank you enough. I really enjoyed it.
Oh, thanks so much.
It was really lovely to talk to both of you, and your show is marvelous.
Oh, thank
You're
you.
You're doing really wonderful work. So.
Oh, all thank right. you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
All right. Take care.
Take care.
Bye.
I don't think you have to love motherhood. You know, I think that what you have to find within the experience of motherhood is moments that you love. And I think Bad Mom and I'd Rather Be an Auntie really, what Lois had to say is really that you've cast the experience of motherhood into the shadows, and you need to step out of the shadows, and you need to bring your kids out of the shadows, and recognize that your own happiness and the light that fills you when you can pay attention to and attend to your kids and the beauty and the possibility and the wonder that's inside of them will naturally make you feel happier and better about being a mom and bring you out of the shadows. I hope that the next letter we get, if they decide to write us, is really much more focused on their kids and the moments where they see their kids as bright and shining and they themselves feel illuminated by them.
Dear Sugar Radio is produced by WBUR in Boston.
We are produced and edited by Lisa Tobin.
We're recording today at Talkback Sound and Visual in Portland, Oregon.
Our engineer is Josh Millman. And you can send letters to DearSugarRadio@gmail.com. I hope, that part of what we are able to do on the podcast is say, why not get as dark as you want? So send us whatever you got. We can't wait to read it.
Right.